Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Tony, I believe those are called highlights. I'm not sure, but
we got some.
Somewhere in the recesses of my mind, that word is rattling around. Highlights, when a team does well and has spectacular plays worth replaying. We call those highlights.
Well, they had at least one more highlight than lowlight.
Yes, they did.
And they haven't done a whole lot of that.
They got the permanent highlight. They got the win. That's the permanent highlight. Whatsoever happens before that, you walk away with more points on the scoreboard, and it's a better day than it could have been.
Oh,
let's put it that way.
It
wasn't the best day it could have been, but it was a better day than a lot of other alternatives could have been. Could you imagine? Now, honestly, you may be able to find one back in the archives. Had they not won the game after building a 27-3 lead, Tony, would have, in my memory banks, been the most devastating loss maybe in team history. Regular season loss.
Yeah, I can't remember one off the top of my head.
You know, they went to Indy with a chance to win the division a few years ago.
Yeah, but that was kind of a weird thing.
I get you. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? There may be other ones that caused you to watch the Jags fall out of playoff contention that are more personally devastating to you. Yesterday could have been right there. The Buccaneers allow the first 21-point comeback in the Washington Redskins' history, right? It was a 24-point comeback that looked to be orchestrated by E.J. freaking Manuel.
Washington's
yesterday.
Been playing football a while.
Long time.
And they've never come back in a game like that where Buffalo almost did yesterday. I got a feeling if the Jags hadn't found a way to win, right, if Bortles doesn't make that completion to Hurns and they wind up winning that game, the image of Gus Bradley clapping on the sidelines after the pick six may have been used from now to the end of the season by Jags fans.
I think the image of Toby Gerhart getting stuffed 1, 2, 3, 4 consecutive times might have worked its way in there as well.
Yeah, it was funny on Twitter, man. As soon as they threw that pick six and just the picture of Gus Bradley clapping, trying to keep his guys enthused on the sideline. I mean, there were a lot of upset people. Then they probably
lessons to be learned there.
Still are today. And look, I get it. It's not like they played a perfect game yesterday. A good team, certainly when they get a 24-point lead, stomps on the throat of that opponent. They do. No one is accusing the Jaguars of being a good team. They were good enough yesterday to beat a bad Buffalo Bills team with what they were bringing in to that game with five missing starters on the offensive side of the ball. We talked about it last week. We've been telling this story for a month when it comes to the Jags, and they finally won one. You know, and I'm not saying that you need to throw a party today because the Jaguars won a football game, but I think you're allowed to feel good about your young team, especially when it's Bortles and Hurns and Robinson and Telvin Smith. It's the young guns on this team that found a way to lift you to a victory. I think that's something to celebrate.
Yeah, having your quarterback lead you on a game-winning touchdown drive when you had to have a touchdown, no matter what came before it, because we talk about it all the time. Good teams have their lulls as well, and good teams make mistakes, and you forget about them because they win more often than not. And when you're only winning sporadically, it's easier to focus sometimes on the mistakes, even in victory. But that's your prerogative as a Jags fan. You can focus on anything you like, and we'd like to hear about your focus today at 641-1010. That's the phone number, 641-1010. Also, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Our question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is this. Who was the MVP yesterday, the most valuable performer for your Jacksonville Jaguars during their 34-31 victory over the Buffalo Bills? You can tweet me and Tony at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Even throw Tyler a tweet at 1010XL Tyler. And the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. Phone lines open to you. John Osier will stop by in about 45 minutes or so as he is fresh back from London. We'll get his perspective from across the pond, and we'll keep your reaction first and foremost here on our minds here on this Monday morning. We'll go to the calls next. Also hear from some of the participants in the game throughout the course of the next 2 hours. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today, here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Jags win their second of the year, 34-31 over the Buffalo Bills, and now instead of a two-week malaise of depression, we get at least a little respite from all the negativity. Not completely, because a lot of Jag fans are looking at their performance and saying, yeah, but. A lot of yeah, buts going on today. Hey, do whatever you like. I mean, I honestly do feel like there's a segment of the fan base now that is soured on some part of the team, whether it's coaching, front office, certain players, that they're not even satisfied with victory. And I get it. You want to play better, and you worry that that performance won't be good enough when you play more quality teams, higher quality teams later in the season. I understand that.
Sure.
I totally get that. But yesterday it was good enough. And you don't know how those other teams are going to play. I mean, you don't know what the future holds. And for one day, you think, you know, you could say, hey. And some people are taking that approach. Take any approach you want. It does seem to me, though, that there are some people that are almost, based on the reaction I've heard over the last 24 or so hours, a little less than that, that they're almost not happy that they won because they want to wallow in the negative perception that they've already built up about the performance of this football team, that they can't possibly be any good, that there's no talent on this roster, that the coaching staff is going to cost them games, and all those things may be true to some degree or another, but it almost seems like they'd be happier with a self-fulfilling prophecy defeat yesterday at the hands of the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, it would have been the worst one. Right, I mean, among the last month, you get blown out by the Patriots, you lose to the 40-year-old quarterback up there in Indianapolis while he's vomiting uncontrollably on the sidelines. You lose to a rookie quarterback who turned it over four times the week before, and you give up 38 points in that game. You have a fourth-quarter lead against a division opponent in your own building. That against Buffalo would have been the worst. And I don't even think it would be close to compare it to those other games. If you blow a 24-point lead against E.J. Manuel and the Buffalo Bills with the what they brought into that game. It's why you had a 24-point lead. It's because it was E.J. Manuel. It's because he couldn't handle the blitz, and he kept turning the ball over there. He just could not stop himself there for about 90 seconds, and it gave you the opportunity to win that game. I would say, even if you don't like Gus Bradley, if you're done with Gus Bradley and there's nothing he can do to bring you back, then how about you celebrate the fact that your players, your young nucleus of talent on this team, was good enough to overcome Gus Bradley? If that's the way you want to look at it yesterday in that game, that's fine. Look at it however you want. But my goodness, guys, y'all don't get enough wins to not feel good on a Monday after a win.
Again, that's your life. I'm going to feel better than I have over the last month anyway. Stephen Gilmore said after the game, sour grape city here. Talking about Allen Robinson, quote, he wasn't really tough to guard if you watch the film. He caught, I don't know how many passes. That'd be six for 98 yards and a touchdown, Gilmore. He wasn't tough to guard. If you watch the film, it will tell you that. He's okay. He's an NFL receiver, average.
Well,
let's see. If you got 98 yards a game, Tony, over the course of a season, that would put you near 1,600 yards for the season, and Stephen Gilmore apparently thinks that is an average level of production. I don't watch the Bills week in, week out. Maybe that's what he averages giving up to other teams' receivers. I don't know. But whatever. You know, they're all so sad. Rex was so sad. Oh, he was so sad. Oh, teal. It's a dumb color. So sad. How can you lose to the Jags, Rex? Oh.
How do you lose to the Jags?
I hope it burns.
And the Jets are pretty good.
Yeah, that too.
Rex, you left.
The Jets got better when you left.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of pressure, I imagine, on Rex Ryan up there in Buffalo right now.
He's a little sad.
Did you guys see what Rex Ryan did pregame? His little
snarky move. He does that a lot. Yeah, he does that a lot. He sent out the whole offensive line to kind of troll Doug Marrone. And he did that last year. And honestly, when Rex does stuff like that, I kind of appreciate it. You know, because I think it gets lost a lot of times in football, especially, that you're allowed to have a personality, right? It's allowed to be fun every now and then. And the idea that a head coach notices stuff like that and does that kind of thing doesn't bother me at all. In fact, it just makes me kind
of
chuckle.
It flies in the face of all these people going, oh, there's no motivation there. They don't care. Nobody's thinking about that. Clearly, they're thinking about that.
At least maybe it's just a bone to the fans of the Buffalo Bills. I doubt Rex Ryan cares at all.
I think maybe the offensive linemen care. Maybe somebody's got to care, or they wouldn't be doing that move.
See, I think it's funny.
You know what? Scoreboard.
They lost.
Who cares? It's over. Scoreboard.
Whoever you're sending out there for a coin toss makes no difference in a football game.
I get it. It makes no difference, but he's trying to show up Jacksonville, and he's trying to be Rex. And look, trust me, when he's a coach of my team, I loved him. He's the kind of guy, if Spurrier's a coach of your team, you love him. If he's coaching against you, you can't stand him. That kind of thing. And that's just the way it is with Rex Ryan. But he's a loser today, along with the rest of the Buffalo Bills organization. Let's get some calls going here. 641-1010. We'll start this morning with Eric in Ponte Vedra. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, we got a win. We'll take it. We're right back in the playoff hunt. Now, as far as the film goes, as far as that last game, keep your eye on Jonathan Cyprian. I think he's made tons of mistakes. Never is where he should be. Made a good hit, that one hit, okay, we'll give him that. But he is just a miserable player. He has no idea where he is at on the field. And just look at the film again. Every single game, he's not where he should be.
All right, well, I mean, look, he's had his struggles. There's no question about it. Played very well against Indy. Played very poorly last week. And that was a big play in the game. No matter, and that's part of it, too, Tony. And I haven't rewatched it to focus in on Jonathan Cyprian, whether he's out of position. I'm sure he was on some occasions. I'll put it this way. I'll take your word for it. But at the same time, you know, I heard people on the fifth quarter yesterday talking about how, well, basically they gifted you a fumble at the one-yard line. No, they didn't.
He made a play.
Cyprian came up and smacked McCoy in the mouth and made him drop the football. That's what happens. You know, E.J. Manuel did telegraph the pass that Telvin Smith picked off. But Aaron Colvin came in and put a blindside hit on the guy and forced him to fumble. That wasn't E.J. Manuel laying the ball on the ground and saying, here, guys, take it. That was one of your guys making a play against E.J. Manuel.
And I don't even care that he telegraphed the pass that Telvin picked off. Telvin picked it off and ran it back to the house. That's not gifting anything. Is it a bad play by E.J. Manuel? Yeah, it's also a really, really good play by Telvin Smith. And I know Cyprian's one of these guys. He takes a lot of heat from a lot of the fans out there, and I think a lot of it is deserved. But he takes so much heat that when he makes a play like that, people are like, oh, he got a break there.
Yeah, but.
No, he hit the crap out of one of the best running backs in the league and forced him to fumble at the one-yard line. That's a play. If you're going to get on him all the time for the bad plays he makes, and he makes them, right? You have to give him credit to some degree when he makes that kind of play, too. And he made one yesterday. Now, what
big,
he did outside
big
of that...
play in that game.
I know I saw him miss a couple tackles yesterday. I'm not saying that I thought Cyprian played a great game yesterday, but that was a huge play.
You take that play away, that's at least three points on the board for the Buffalo Bills. They had a possession taken away from them there by Jonathan Cyprian, and that could have been the difference in the football game, ultimately, the way it played out. Let's go to Greg in Interlochen next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Greg.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I've been Team Hearns since the first game I saw him play last year. This kid continues to hit some key, yeah, he dropped a few, but he gets some key catches to save these Jaguars and some real, gotta-have-it type situations. Now, I'm just curious, and I ask you guys this, when Lee ever comes back, will he be the number three on the depth chart, you think? And how are they using him?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, you could see him lining up in different places like he had in the slot, but I think Allen Hurts is going to have a role. You play a lot of three wide receiver sets in the National Football League anyway, Tony. I think Allen Hurts has proven he deserves a role. I don't think they're just going to take him off the field.
No.
At least I think they'd be nuts to, and just put Marquise Lee in his place. Marquise Lee's going to have to come back, get a few reps, prove he can handle those reps without his legs betraying him, stay out there, fight through whatever, and stay out there for, I don't know, a month or two consecutively before anybody begins to believe he's anywhere approaching reliable on the availability front. So, you know, I'd like to have Marquise Lee back. I hear a lot of people writing him off already. You're 7 games into his second season of his NFL career. Go back and look at where Isaac Bruce was at this point in time. The guy couldn't stay on the football field. Look at Fred Taylor's early part of his career with the label fragile. And, you know, people thought Fred was never going to fulfill his potential until he did fulfill his potential.
Sure. But
I wouldn't write off Marquise Lee. I mean, Marquise Lee isn't choosing to have hamstring injuries. It's disappointing. It's frustrating. But I'd be careful about making a value judgment on Marquise Lee as an individual because he's not his body has not been able to hold up to this point in time. I'd like to see him come back and add a dynamic element to this offense. But, Tony, it's much like you got to the point with Justin Blackmon. Don't ever count on it. And if you get it at this point, you probably will consider it a bonus.
Yeah, and I know Prosser was talking about this at the end of his show today, too, specifically about Marquise Lee. But, honestly, with the development of Robinson and Hearns right now, and you're adding Julius Thomas into this offense, why wouldn't you want Marquise Lee back? Right? I mean, he is a super athlete. If nothing else, he is a super athlete. And I'm not sure where they'd want to play him on the field, but you have two receivers that are establishing themselves in the National Football League. It's not like it was 4 weeks ago when you were like, we need Marquise Lee back on the field so that we can get a dynamic element in this offense. You have it. These guys are providing that right now for you. Marquise Lee is just adding to what you have as far as athleticism on the football field. Why wouldn't you want that back out there? As far as what role the Jaguars envision for him, I know the talk in the preseason was they saw him as an outside receiver, not a slot guy. So does that mean that Hearns or Robinson moves into that position? I don't know. But I know that the Jaguars are better with those three guys on the field than they are with just the two guys on the field because of the athleticism and the game-breaking ability that Marquise Lee represents. And if it means he's only on the field for 20 snaps like Cindric Marks is right now, so be it. I want the 20 snaps for Marquise Lee.
I'm with you. I'm with you. And, you know, just don't expect it and don't count on it. And when it comes, if it comes, it'll be hopefully a pleasant bonus. Let's get Doug at the beaches before we break. Up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Doug.
Hey, Mike. Hey, thank goodness the Jaguars won the ball game yesterday, because with the bye week coming up, it would have been a miserable 2 weeks just talking about blowing it up and getting rid of Gus. So just from a pure fan dialogue, I'm glad that they won the ball game. You know, so you had asked the question, who was the player of the game?
I think
it was Aaron Colvin, because Aaron Colvin makes plays the first quarter, lays out EJ Manuel for a touchdown. He ends the ball game with a nice knockdown. And what is going to be interesting moving forward is, do the Jaguars continue with the blitz? Because we saw more blitz work successfully yesterday, and the question will be, do they stick with that? Because we got pressure on the quarterback. We got the sacks that we've been talking about, and I want to see them continue with that. I don't know how much better they can do. I mean, because they did get a little bit burned on the blitz, but it was nice to see us putting pressure on the quarterback, and we got 7 points, from Aaron Colvin on that hit. So
right.
Big time for the Jaguar defense to get that pressure.
Doug, thank you for the call. Tony and I discussed this in the postgame yesterday, specifically about the blitz. Look, did they give some up because of it? Yes.
Yeah.
So you've got to be careful. It can't be an every down thing, but they also generated points directly off of it, Tony, with big defensive plays. This is a team that's been starved for turnovers and big game-changing type plays. They had game-changing type plays. What a quarter. Best quarter of football they played all season long. Put up 27. Should have been 28, as we all know. We'll get to that coming up as well. But, yeah, Aaron Colvin, as a matter of fact, I gave you four candidates as nominees for player of the game in the postgame yesterday, and that's who you opted to go with. And I think all of them were deserving, certainly, and I don't want to go through them again because I want to leave the field open if anybody else wants to nominate anyone else that they feel was deserving of a player of the game mention. That's the Tom Bush Family Dealerships question of the day. Who was the MVP of the Jags' second victory of the season? Tweet me at MD_1010XL and tweet Tony at 1010XL Fat Tony with your replies there. And we'll check in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line coming up as well at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Victory Monday. We don't have a lot of them, but we're going to enjoy this one here on Jaguars Today, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Sometimes they come in bunches, and that's what happened today. And we were aggressive, and, you know, guys played more aggressively. And not only their coverage, Bob Babich did a great job calling it. The players did a good job executing. You know, we came out with the win.
Gus Bradley talking about the big plays of his defense yesterday. 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board, or if you'd like to weigh in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. It's the same number. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you Monday shows here on Jaguars Today. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, everything from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Visit Guns for Jacks. That's Guns, the number 4, JAX.com. Or even better yet, stop by South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. A couple here, Tony.
Yes.
let's see, MVP, several of them on the text line that were similar to this. MVP of the game was the ref that called the horrible pass interference call to extend the Jags drive. Without that, we lose. Okay, A, without that, it's fourth down. You get to try on fourth down as well. It's possible to complete a pass on fourth down to convert the down just like it was to get the pass interference on third down.
Okay? Sure.
So it is possible. The game is not over at that point. And it, again, it just seems like people
certainly was a big moment.
Are looking for reasons. Yeah, they won, but they really should have lost. I mean, it's, oh, are you, this is something that a Bills fan should be pointing to. Man, that pass interference. Instead, Jags fans going, oh yeah, we stink. Pass interference. I mean, what about, Tony, as many have pointed out, you go back to Blake Bortles, interception, which was, I don't care what the situation was. It's a bad throw. It's a mortar ball. But Allen Robinson's getting mugged on that. What if they call holding or pass interference on the defense properly on that call? Okay, then you don't have to pick six occur, and you have a first down, and maybe the game's completely different anyway, right? So,
but that's kind of, you know, that points to what you're talking about with this fan base right now, at least a portion of it, where they're pointing to this. I don't think it was pass interference either on Brian Walters. I don't think that was pass interference. I thought it was a bad call when they made it. But Jaguars fans, why would you focus on that? Like, there's no reason for you to,
right?
As a Jaguars fan, the focus should be on why the hell didn't they call it on Allen Robinson when he's getting mugged in the middle of the field and our quarterback winds up throwing a pick six that gave him a lead in that game that put us in the opportunity to lose it.
Right.
That should be where Jags fans are pointing and getting upset, not saying thank you for the official for handing us an opportunity to win that game. It's just that it's weird. Some of the feeling out there in this fan base right now, it's weird. I get it. They're done with Gus, and they're not coming back, at least some portion of them. But, guys, they won.
Right. And you know,
they won.
Well, we had a guy call in the post game yesterday and talk about the Bills getting gifted a touchdown on the Robert Woods. Did he get his second foot in bounds? I wasn't upset with the call in the field. It was a borderline call that could have gone either way, and I saw nothing in replay that clearly overturned it. But that I understand. You're a Jags fan. You're upset that you feel like the other team was given something. Why are you upset if your team got given something? Teams get given blown calls all the time.
Right.
It's okay to take advantage of a bad call. What did they do after that? They went down and they drove down. Not only did they score, then Buffalo got the ball back with plenty of time to drive down and tie this game. All they need is a field goal, and the Jags get a defensive stop on downs. Be happy that they performed in the moment. Yes, it wasn't perfect all the way up to it, but boy, to get hung up on the pass interference call, you're a Bills fan in Jags clothing. I gotta wonder. I mean, I just don't understand. And here's another one, coming in on Marquise Lee. Given how we got rid of Cecil because of injuries, do you see Marquise heading in the same direction because of soft tissue injuries?
In 2 years.
I mean, Cecil played 4 years, and then they finally decided, you know what, we're going to move on from Cecil because he doesn't stay healthy.
He was hurt constantly for 4 years because he was drafted with a 4-year contract. Cecil Shorts played out his contract in Jacksonville, and then they chose not to bring him back.
If Marquise Lee's next 2.5 years go like they have the first year and a half, yes, they will move on from Marquise
Lee.
It'll
be exactly like
Marquise
Cecil Shorts.
Marquise Lee is cheap labor, and he is a quick-twitch, dynamic athlete, when healthy, that you don't have much of on the offensive side of the football. This desire to be rid of him because he's not available to you right now, I just don't get it. I mean, is it because, you know, Cedric Marks tore his ACL? We all know what a torn ACL is, right?
Yeah.
Is it because it's a hamstring injury and we expect football players to be tough guys and you must play through these injuries? You know, Deion Sanders used to talk about his toe. He used to mock players. He got a toe injury until he got turf toe. And then he couldn't play because it's such a painful, debilitating injury. You don't know what it feels like to be in Marquise Lee's body. I don't know. Nobody knows. I hope he gets back healthy and hope he helps his football team. Is it frustrating? Is it disappointing that he hasn't been a part of this team up to this point, a productive part? Yes, certainly. But don't cut off your nose to spite your face.
No, and look, you don't know what the conversation is behind closed doors between Marquise Lee and the training staff and the team either, right? I mean, they may be looking at it and saying, look, we want you healthy. Like, we don't want you going out there and risking this hamstring again, especially when they're watching Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns and Julius Thomas making plays and saying, look, Brian Walters is okay in the spot that we have envisioned for you right now.
He's great at drawing pass interference.
Right. Exactly. Get healthy, Marquise. When we get you back, we want you back. We don't want to have to send you out there and you be thinking, is it going to give out on this play or the next play? We don't know that that conversation isn't exactly what's happening in this building with Marquise Lee, too. And he is the guy that's pushing, saying, let me play. I feel good enough to play. I can give him 20 good snaps. I want to be out there. You don't know that that's not what's happening behind closed doors. There are a lot of assumptions being made about what's going on with Marquise Lee. And the truth is, we don't know. What's going on?
Here's another
with
one.
Marquise.
641-1010, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Well, it's starting to look like Peyton Manning made Julius Thomas look as good as he did. I pray not, but that's what it's starting to look like. When did that start? Yesterday? Because what about last week?
7 for 78 and a touchdown.
Was that 7 for 78 and a touchdown? Was, I guess, Blake Bortles was channeling Peyton Manning last week? He was okay last week, but he came in with a rib injury. And he suffered what Rick Ballew described as a left leg injury. We don't know of the sort. Now,
sure.
He was off with Blake Bortles. I don't know if it was on him. I don't know if it was on Blake.
Blake was kind of off yesterday.
He was off yesterday, but it could have been, there could have been times, certainly, when Julius Thomas was running the wrong route. I don't know. I mean, you'd have to go and sit in the film room with these guys and watch as they review it and see who is wrong, who is right. I mean, I don't know. It's DeAndre Hopkins. He's a fraud, right? Because yesterday he didn't go for 100 yards, Tony. And yes, he had done it for four straight games, but now we're seeing the real DeAndre Hopkins in Houston, right? Because, I mean, you know, you're not going to do it every week at a high level. It's a look inside the frustration of the Jaguar fan base despite the victory right now. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Let's go back to the phones. Brian's on the north side. Next up here on 1010XL. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, guys. I don't know what's going on, but I'm excited about yesterday. A couple points. Number one, that was, if I'm not mistaken, the first time Blake Bortles has had a fourth quarter comeback drive that ended in a touchdown. So very positive, as well as that seemed to me the first game that he really rebounded very well from the pick six. So I'm very excited with that. To me, I saw the growth of my franchise quarterback yesterday, and that's most important out of anything else we get out of this season. Number two, the defensive guys, as you mentioned earlier in the last segment, the defensive, your core building blocks, man, Colvin, Kelvin Smith, Jonathan Cyprian, they all flashed yesterday. They made big time plays. You know, how can you not be excited about that? Number three, speaking as both a Jaguar fan and I'm sure for all future fantasy football owners, please, please, Jaguars, do not Stacey Mack T.J. Yeldon. Please don't do it. The guy's 6'1", 228.
Brian, I don't have a problem with Stacey Mack route if he scores, because Stacey would score. And you're trying to win football games, and I understand what you're saying, kind of tongue-in-cheek there, but if Toby Gerhardt scores on one of those first couple of carries, I don't have a problem, man. This is not fantasy football, and I love fantasy as much as anybody, but if the Jags think he's the best solution from 1 yard out, and he proves to be, that's the thing. You gotta prove to be that, Tony. And after successive repeated efforts where he didn't always follow Tyson Alualu to a hole that seemed to be created, and you keep running your head into the wall over and over again, it's easier to look back now and assess it than had it been a defeat yesterday, because that may have been the focal point of everything, that four-play sequence, which is a shame because the Jags burned over 9 minutes off the clock to put themselves in position up 2 touchdowns to put a game away, and they're going for the throat right there, and they felt that that was their best option. And you know, whether you want to blame it on play calling or execution, you can blame anything you like. They didn't get in. You know what? Hey, defense, don't let them drive off the 1 yard line either. Okay. It's a team game. You had them pinned at the one. That was the worst case scenario. And, fortunately they did pull out the victory, and it doesn't have to be the focal point of why, or one of the reasons why, they lost another football game.
No, but it does become a discussion point throughout the week as far as what they're doing in that kind of situation. And it didn't just cost them theirs. We discussed yesterday a little bit, Mike. It's when they put Toby back in the game on a 3rd-and-1, and I was sitting here, they had to call a timeout because they subbed Toby in. They had 12 guys in the huddle. I think the players in the huddle were shocked that Toby was allowed to go back out onto the field after the four plays on the goal line. But they had to call a timeout because they had too many guys in the huddle. And then, obviously, the Buffalo Bills were thinking the same thing I was. That there's
no way they're giving it to Toby Garrett.
No way Toby gets another touch in this game. And instead, they tried to run a quote-unquote trick play with Tyson Alualu. If you have T.J. Yeldon in the game, I think the Bills have to respect that at that moment. I really felt like they were thinking the same thing I was, that Toby's not getting this play.
Or if Toby Gerhart has proven he's converting these fourth and ones or third and ones at a high clip, and then you give it to the fullback, that's a good play. You mix it up and go away from your tendency and try not to be predictable. But in this case, it was anything but effective.
It was bad.
It was, and there's no two ways about it. But easier to swallow when it comes in victory. All right, we got to step aside, and we'll come back with this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Plus, John Osher scheduled to join us in about 10 minutes. He's back in town, and he'll join us here in studio in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios on a Wild West Guns and Gold Money. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, October 26, 1980, Baltimore quarterback Burt Jones sacked a record 12 times in a 17-10 loss to St. Louis. Meanwhile, Houston quarterback Warren Moon would later go on to equal that mark on September 29, 1985 in a game at Dallas. In 1993, the NFL announced a new expansion team. That would be the Carolina Panthers. They said, hold on, we're going to think about the other one for a little while. Get back to me if you can recall who they gave that other one to. Born on this date in 1911, Tony, the only coach, give me a dollar right now, if you know the only coach that is in the Pro and College Football Hall of Fame as a coach.
And I do not know.
Sid Gilman would have gotten you a dollar. NFL Hall of Fame coach with L.A., San Diego, and Houston. Also coached Miami and Cincinnati in the college ranks. Chuck Foreman, former running back for the Vikings, born in the state in 1950. Five-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro. Jesse Armstead, NFL linebacker with the Giants for years. Also a five-time Pro Bowler, born in the state in 1970. Happy 45th to him, as well as Burt Emanuel, born in the state. He turns 45 years old today. The Burt Emanuel rule, you may have heard of. Burt Emanuel was playing, of course, for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Rams in the 99 NFC Championship game when he made a 13-yard catch to the Rams' 22-yard line with 47 seconds left in the game. The Buccaneers trailing 11-6 at the time. They call a timeout, and the reception gets reviewed, and it was overturned because the referee noticed that the nose of the ball had touched the ground, despite the fact that Emanuel had controlled the catch all the way to the ground. So now the ball is allowed to touch the ground, and as long as you have clear control of the football and the ground doesn't assist you in making it, it's known as the Burt Emanuel rule. Of course, that didn't help the Buccaneers at the time, as the greatest show on turf would go on to win that game and advance and ultimately beat the Tennessee Titans in the Super Bowl the very next week. And that is this date in football, brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Houston Texans are once again expected to be without their star running back after Arian Foster fell to the ground in their loss to Miami yesterday without being contacted. Reports at the stadium were that it was an Achilles injury. Foster is going to undergo an MRI today, but based on the way the injury looked and the early reports, the worst is expected, and that would be a ruptured Achilles tendon, which would hold him out for the rest of the 2015 season and would push him into the middle of the offseason, basically, and we don't know what he would look like in 2016 if that is indeed the injury. The New York Giants and defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul are expected to meet again tomorrow to reevaluate JPP's injured hand. The two sides have not met since early September. The contract remains a big hurdle for both the team and the player. JPP has not signed his franchise tender because if he did, the Giants could release him and make him a free agent, which is unlikely. or place him on the non-football injury list, which is much more likely, which would ensure that they would not have to pay him for the 2015 season. Apparently, the Giants are willing to renegotiate that deal with JPP. To this point, though, Pierre-Paul has been unwilling to talk about taking anything less than the franchise tender.
That is correct, sir. We go to the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line 641-1010 if you'd like to weigh in on that or on the phone lines. I get this one, Tony, from the 904 from a guy who I recognize the phone number. He complains a lot. This is what I'm hearing from Mike. Quote, stop whining, Jag fans. We won. How dare you complain about the Jags blowing a 4-touchdown lead or the horrific play calling with Toby on the goal line or the fact we almost blew it on the final drive of the game. The final drive of the game was a kneel down, okay, just so you know. You don't almost blow the final drive of the game. I didn't make a conscious decision yesterday to be unhappy, he continues. It's just that I was more relieved than happy about the win. Don't belittle the fans that are complaining today. We've endured our fair share of heartache after these last 6 weeks, and I will follow that up by the text that preceded it directly. Folks, I don't get all the negative crap. We won. It's a W. I'll gladly take 9 more like this. Go Jags. Feel any way you like, honestly. That doesn't mean I have to understand why the predominant feeling seems to be negative today. I get it. Did they play perfect football? No. Cindric Marks pointed it out after the game. You know, we almost blew this game. We let them come storming back. Don't celebrate it too much. That doesn't mean don't celebrate it at all. Man, I mean, people have said, you know, Tony, you know, all this is going to be is Gus Bradley winning a few more meaningless games and getting another year of job security. Well, if they're meaningless, why do you care if he wins any of them? Honestly, if they're meaningless, what do you care? Right? They're just meaningless games to you. So what difference does it make who the coach is the rest of the season for as far as that goes? It makes no sense to me.
No.
They're not meaningless to this team. This is their livelihood. This is what they play for. This is what they played their whole lives for up until this point in time. They went across to England. Did they play a great team? No.
I mean, would you rather be Tampa? I mean, today, honestly, would you rather be Tampa or Jacksonville today?
Right.
Tampa blew the lead.
Thing. They had this big lead. They played great. They built a 21-point lead.
And one's talking about the 21-point lead Tampa built. I guarantee you.
Why does everyone feel good? Do you think all the Redskin fans feel bad today or good?
Good.
They feel great, right, because they came back and
won.
What about the time we were down by 21 points? I mean, I think they would feel, at least that's my guess, is they would feel great because they overcame it and they came back and won. Jags did a lot to help blow a lead, no question about it. And then he overcame it. John Osier is here with us. I give him all the credit for the victory. The senior writer from Jaguars.com as he has made his way back from London. How was the trip?
Look at you, all rested and fiery.
I am rested, actually. You know, I went home yesterday. I took a 3-hour nap in the middle of the afternoon. It was phenomenal.
You know, you're all spry.
I am. I am spry today. I do. I feel rested. For more rested on a Monday than having a long time. How are you?
Well, this dates back to last year when I hosted your show on Monday after England.
So that's right. You're trying to show me up right. by coming in. For
I was
5
showing
minutes.
You.
Right. I got you. Well, you weren't here at 10 o'clock. I noticed.
No, I wasn't.
No,
I
you
wasn't.
Were not.
But I could have been. Just
you
like
how been.
Kramer could have.
I could have been last year. Right. Just like I could come in tomorrow and Wednesday.
That's right.
But I'm not going to. How about that? That'll make everybody on the text line very happy.
No, it won't.
Yes, it will. It's okay.
They're not going
to
be
happy. I don't need to be universally loved. I've long since passed that years ago that I'm here to do a job and hopefully I remain employed. And just for the record, because
trying
it was
to get
asked
by.
Today.
Just a guy getting by.
I'm not on the Jaguars payroll. Anytime you point, it's so funny. That's the mindset. Like, when there are good things that happened yesterday. You may have noticed top of mind being that they won.
Yep.
Second of which may be that your quarterback overcame, as one of our callers pointed out, another pick six, blowing that big lead. It didn't melt down, and he came back and delivered a game-winning touchdown drive. As Tony has pointed out several times, the core guys that you hope are going to be the core going forward, your receivers, your quarterback, Talvin Smith, Aaron Colvin, these guys were making plays. And by the way, I should give a tip of the cap to Chris Clements, as much as he's been maligned this year.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the scoop and score, the ball falls down, you pick it up and you run in, but I thought his hit very early on helped set the tone.
Yep.
He did a little stunt and came right up the middle, and he did E.J. Manuel right under the chin. Legal hit, but just really, I thought it was a tone setter.
And that was, what, first drive? And it was,
first drive.
I mean, third down on the first drive,
Well, and again, this is not this year going to be a team that puts a lot of games away by the third quarter. I mean, it could have yesterday, yes, but it's going to play a lot of close games. It already has. They've dropped some that they shouldn't have. But they won one yesterday that easily, after that pick six, you can think of a multitude of times since Blake Bortles got here, where after that pick six, the next series was a three and out, where it just didn't feel anything like any of the good things that had happened already in the game.
And you'd follow that up the three out by letting Buffalo get a first down and running out the clock.
And that's been the pattern. So, look, I get the giving up the 24-point lead. We can talk about that all we want. But as I think you said as I was coming in here, they got the touchdown, and then they got a stop. Well, the reverse had happened two or three different times this year. So if they, you know, if they figured out how to do that, or if that gives them whatever it is that you have to do that to learn that, I've been talking all year about this team trying to figure out how to win in those situations. Yesterday they did. So on that front, that was very important. Now, yes, fourth, you know, not getting in 13 times from the 1 yard line is an issue we can discuss.
Some sarcasm there on the senior writer's part. Can you hang around for a few
minutes?
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a quick break because we're up against the clock here. But when we return, we'll have John Osier here with us from Jaguars.com, safely back in town and glad to see him. And we'll also get some of your calls in as well, with John on the line at 641-1010 on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. That's why Osier didn't miss it. Kidding me? He's not going to miss the Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, we continue along your Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. John Osher, Jaguars.com here with us. Here's some tweets from Jags PR guru, Tad Dickman. Jaguars wide receiver Allen Robinson with 6 and Allen Hurns with 5 have combined for 11 touchdown receptions. That's the most by any tandem in the National Football League so far. Allen Hurns has now set a franchise record with a receiving touchdown in 5 consecutive games. Allen Robinson is the first NFL player aged 22 or younger. The first NFL player aged 22 or younger with 550 plus receiving yards and 6 plus touchdowns through his team's first 7 games of the season in the last 2 decades. That's pretty good. There's been an influx of good receiver talent, particularly in recent years, where guys, you know, used to be.
Yeah, but that's just an excuse for being young, Mike.
Well, I'm on the payroll. All right. It's not me being on the payroll.
Just stop already.
And Blake Bortles, just the third quarterback age 23 or younger in NFL history with 15 touchdown passes through the first 7 games of a season since, Dan Marino in 84. And
Matt, you can't say that, Mike.
I just did. And Matt Stafford in 2011, I believe he threw 40 that year. Stafford did. Look, last week they're getting on me because I critiqued Blake when he threw all the touchdowns against Tampa, and I said, "Look, there were opportunities that he missed. He could have had an even bigger day." And you look at both sides. Look, we talked about it on the post game immediately after the game. There are plenty of things you could pick apart here. Tony, Dwayne Grotz was terrible yesterday. By my eyes, I'm not a film watcher. I'm not an all-22 breaking it down. Logman will do that for us tomorrow and let us know just how good or bad it was if we have a misconception about it. But he's the guy. I doubt it too.
Box eyes are very much a rough draft because there's a limit to it, but. Didn't look good.
Didn't look good, right? They bench House for Grotz. Grotz gets benched in the game for House. I mean, House didn't have a great game, I didn't think, but Grotz was just awful yesterday. So I recognize there are areas on this team that didn't perform up to 100% standard. Overall in the NFL, that's the case practically for any team going. And
absolutely.
The 16 of them come out with victories, minus the bye weeks. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's easier to, I'd much rather sit here after a victory and say, what are things we can correct? Because we hear about correcting things all the time and they lose and it gets tiresome. Well, here, they did overcome. They made a bunch more mistakes, but they also made a bunch of good plays and they ended up making good plays after the mistakes, as we've already talked about with Blake coming back from a pick six, which we haven't seen that much in his past.
No, he did it a little bit in Tampa right after the one in the first half and came back after that pick six and played well I forget what the exact timing was, but they reeled off 17 points after his pick six. And he played okay, looked like he recovered from that. And then it all went south in the fourth quarter, so you forget it, and it's fine. But I thought he responded well that day. And this day, the other day, a much more pressurized, obvious fourth quarter memorable situation, certainly responded. And if that's what you're looking for, you've been waiting for him to do that. He's had these flashes. He's looked good statistically. And you've been waiting for that moment where, okay, bad play. So what? After that bad play, they were still only, you know, there's been a lot of situations where I've got no zone emails after a pick six from him. And they say, well, the game shouldn't have been over. They were only down four. Why didn't they just come back and score? Well, yesterday he did.
Right.
And they did. And the pass
mean he'll
to Hearns.
Do it next time, but maybe they won't need to.
Right.
Next
time. And the pass to Hearns was a big time play. It was an aggressive
catch.
Play. It was, why did they throw the ball downfield? Well, they threw the ball downfield. You know, they are going after it more. They are more aggressive. Those guys are growing up. They, you know, so a lot of things, especially after a day where overall on offense, it was balky. You know, there were good things in the first half, and there was a really good drive in the second half, and then nothing. And then much like Blake's been able to do some, nothing, 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 and then when it matters, move the ball.
All right, let's just do this quickly because we got some callers that want to talk to you here. But the goal line sequence, right? They've driven it down. It's 9 minutes off the clock. This is an epic drive. I mean, they're putting together an epic drive. We asked them to come out and respond in the second half. They drive it down for over 9 minutes.
Yep.
60% of the third quarter is gone, and Buffalo has not touched the ball.
Neither did Tampa. Tampa.
They could not get to London in time to touch the ball.
Right.
They're up 13. They're trying to put the game away. They're trying to play aggressively. I don't have an issue with them not kicking the field goal.
Right.
All right. I don't. And
because if they had, we'd be getting emails about why they weren't more aggressive.
You're going to get emails regardless, right? So I have
no
problem. You're trying to put the game away. You're up 13. You're trying to make it a 3-touchdown game. And for all intents and purposes at that point in time, I realize how that went the rest of the way, but Buffalo is going to be a lot more demoralized if you're able to punch it in. They got new life instead. So the play calling sequence, okay? We all thought Toby missed the hole on second down, right? He ran the wrong way. If he goes to the hole, he probably scores. So is it, where do you find fault in this sequence? Is it with Greg Olsen for staying with it? Is it with Toby Gerhardt? Is it with the offensive line? Should they have mixed it up and bootleg Blake or put TJ Yeldon in? What are your thoughts?
Well, it sounds like all of the above. Again, I saw it once. I thought I saw the same thing you did on second down. You know, at some point when you want to be a running team, which they do, and you want to be a team that can impose its will, at some point, you're saying philosophically, look, if we can't run the ball in from the one four times, then we're not going very far this year. You know, there's a feeling that coaches have of that.
Did you watch Sunday Night Football last night? You probably did. You were on the plane last night. Okay,
yeah.
Tony, you watch a game last night at all?
Yeah.
Okay, I watched it in and out, all right? Jonathan Stewart had a pretty good game last night, right?
He did.
He looked like he was running well, ran for over 90 yards
last
night.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
When they get inside the five, they put Mike Tolbert in there, right? You know what the difference is? Mike Tolbert converts.
He scores.
He scores. I don't have a problem with TJ Yeldon not being the guy because, quite frankly,
I agree.
TJ has not been we've seen him, we saw in the preseason, right? Trying to jump. You remember that?
Right.
He had the fumble. We've seen some other ones where he's got stuffed. He's more of a patient guy than a pound the hole guy. I'm not saying he can't ever convert a third and short. Don't get me wrong on that. But you have a big 240-pound bruiser, and this is the role you've defined for him. And
that was the package. What they did. Remember, it worked a couple times in preseason, and everybody said, yes,
beautifully.
That's what it's going to be. And they really hadn't.
Haven't had much.
I don't have
cause
the stats,
to use it,
but you haven't seen that very much.
Well, Toby was hurt for a while. Yeah.
So they get there yesterday. And they're like, okay, this is the package. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to use it. You know, you don't necessarily want to change packages in the middle of a game just because it didn't work once. So, you know, but I think Gus said it best in the press conference. Got to address that. Because if that doesn't work four times from the one,
then you're going to have to try something new, right?
You can't keep beating your head against the wall. At the same time, at some point, you got to be able to score. And so I think it's not just on Toby. At some point during that sort of a sequence, there should be push enough where the guy just follows a blocker.
Right. Or you know what? You can quarterback sneak. I mean, Tom Brady is pretty valuable to the Patriots. They don't have any problem letting him quarterback sneak, right? I mean, he does it. He exposes himself to hits. Quarterback sneak. Roll your quarterback. I know people hate it, but they probably would have, given the alternative right now, how would a fade look right now on one of those downs, at least to take a shot, right?
Sure.
People hate the fade until it works.
It looks like that's going to be a very good play for Allen Robinson over the course of his career. I mean, because he's that guy.
Right.
But, you know, it's hard to defend when it looks like the same play over and over again. At the same time,
I'm not trying to defend we were saying it while it was happening. You can't do this again.
Yeah.
You can't keep running
it. But I think it speaks to philosophy a lot, John. I think they want to be a team that does it that way, and it is Toby. When they need a yard, they feel like they have a guy that can go get them a yard. I think they want to be that way because Green Bay doesn't run that offense like that. Green Bay in that situation is going to go out there with five wide receivers and Aaron Rodgers standing there making a decision.
And I would too.
Right.
Him
right. Exactly. Right. But that's their philosophy in that part of the field. It's just that I don't know that they have what they need to have the philosophy they have at that part of the field because it didn't look like to this point with Toby being here in Jacksonville.
No.
He has not been good enough in that situation for you to give it to
him.
No,
he's been
times.
Good in spots, but, you know, I'm sure Brandon Linder being out hurt in that situation, the brawler, but you still got to get it in four times from the one.
All right, let's go to the phone. 641-1010. Chris in Mandarin, thanks for hanging on. You're up next on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, what's going on? I just, you know, first of all, my expectations for this year, if we go 6-10, I'm a happy guy. Okay, that was my expectation coming into the year. That remains a level of satisfaction for me, I suppose, if we make it to 6-10. But I'm not happy with the lack of killer instinct, and I know you guys have heard this again and again, but even in the games where we won, we scored no second half points against Miami until we kicked the game winning field goal. And yesterday, obviously, four times from the one, we get 7 points, but they came all the way back. I just feel like it comes from the top down, and it permeates throughout the team. I mean, you have to hold somebody accountable when you can't close out games. With a killer instinct, we could be on a 4-game win streak right now, the way I see it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's killer instinct, though. I don't know if it's that they don't have the instinct to close. You know, that to me seems to indicate that they don't want to go for it to put it away. You know,
I got questions about this last night, and, you know, that was my feeling throughout the second half. And then when I got the questions last night, I was writing it on the plane. I thought, you know, you can say what you want about killer instinct. If they score one of those four times from the one, then they've got killer instinct because they came out and they had a 9-minute, 17-play drive.
Their throat and
that would have
not
looked like
denied.
Big-time killer instinct.
Right.
So is killer instinct what we're criticizing with play call? I mean,
is it the play calling or is it the execution of said play? Or is it maybe poor play calling? But I don't think they...
Because that was as good... You know, you can say what you want about killer instinct, and to me, killer instinct would have been... And there's a part of that that makes sense because Telvin said after the game, and you could feel it from the defense, they did lose a little bit
of
their energy in the second half.
Right.
And I think that's a little bit normal. They haven't played with that a lot.
Look at Miami's game yesterday.
Right.
They got up 41-0 at the half. Houston outscored them in the second half by like four touchdowns.
So there may have been an element of that. At the same time, when I was watching that drive in the second half, I was thinking, boy, this is a real turning point moment for this team because 14-point lead. At halftime, I was walking around the press box in Wembley going, this feels dicey, 27-3, now it's 27-13. One thing goes wrong in your one-score game. I was like, I hope they don't, you know, whatever. And then they come out, boom, boom, boom. As impressive and as methodical a drive as they've had under this regime, maybe. And then they don't get... So is it killer instinct or just lack of execution at the one? I think it's more... On Sunday, I think it was more of that. I think it was more like execution at the one.
Was it not killer instinct on Jonathan Cyprian's part to come up and go for a game-changing hit at the one-yard line? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, it all, the outcome of the game often colors the way we look at what happened during the course of the game.
If they put it away at the one, and if Telvin catches the interception in the end zone, then the margin feels much more comfortable, and maybe that's... Maybe that's killer instinct. So
I would put it more on their inability to consistently play their best football in the second half.
Well, sure.
But that to me is not killer instinct. That is a team that hasn't figured out how to get to a level of consistency where they carry good play from one half onto the other consistently.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I just had trouble with the killer instinct thing. I get the feeling because when you're watching it, that's your feeling of what are they doing? How is this? But I don't think it's killer instinct as much as what we're talking
Trust
about.
Trust me. You're right. The killer instinct was going for it on fourth down. The having nine, almost 10-minute drive.
Yeah.
It's an unheard of long drive in the National
Especially
Football
in that situation where the Bills think they
have
momentum.
Yes.
And they think they're getting back into it. And you talk about imposing your will. Well, they did in that situation, and then just couldn't finish it off.
All right, let's go to Jim next up, I believe, calling from North Carolina this morning. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Morning, guys. I tell you, yesterday, Mike, it was amazing. I watched the game in Jackson, and I told my wife, I said, well, listen, as soon as the game's over, we'll jump in the car and drive up here. And I'm thinking, this is going to be a great post game. Actually, after the last few weeks, it's like, oh, my gosh, you could have taken – the last 2 weeks almost, and, you know, it'd been the same post game. If you didn't know the score of the game, you would have sworn the Jags lost the game. It was absolutely amazing what I was hearing on the radio, other than Leo, which puts a perspective on it, and how enjoyable it was to have a win. And I don't know, it was amazing. I was, over the last couple of weeks, been complaining about no running game. And against Buffalo's vaunted, front seven, TJ had a pretty good game, I would say.
He had a very good game.
Yeah, and so you look at that aspect of it. But I will say this. All these Jags fans need to relax a little. The guy that called up and said, well, winning becomes a habit. Well, in order for winning to become a habit, you have to win. If, let's say, the Jags, probably isn't going to happen, but if they win the rest of the game, rest of the season, is anybody going to look back and go, gosh, that was a terrible win against Buffalo or whatever? It's just this whole thing of developing a habit. And unless I missed it in your, what was going on around the NFL, I didn't see Tom Coughlin come out last night and apologize for beating the Cowboys without Dez Bryant and Tony Romo.
No.
All right, guys, have a good one.
You take your wins. Thank you. And it is interesting when you can name the one guy by name who calls in and is looking at it just from the bright side of things. Look, I get it, John, because what had become a habit was letdowns. And it looked like another one was coming. But in the end, when you realize, wait, you know what? It didn't come. It's almost
two chances to lose that game at the end, and they made plays to make it not happen.
It's almost better to win in that fashion. Almost. I'm not saying, look, it'd be good for this team to win a laugh for every once in a while. But if they had, and it steamrolled, I think a lot of the reaction we would have gotten today, yeah, but come on. It was
E.J.
Manuel. Oh, they're missing five starters on offense.
Right.
It would have been all about that. Yeah, but they're no good. I mean, that's what it would, to me, this reaction would have transitioned over to that kind of reaction.
We talk about Blake and overcoming the adversity there at the end of the game. We haven't seen him do a whole lot of that. We've also never seen that level of adversity. It's never sure. been, we lead by 24 points, and now your quarterback throws the pick six. That's the exclamation point for the comeback for the Buffalo Bills. It was as bad as it's ever been since
Blake
got
here. Yeah, but that
was
just the interference call, Tony.
Right. It's as bad as it's been since Blake got here.
You are on the payroll.
And they overcame it. I mean, Everything was collapsing. It's the last 4 weeks plus what happened in that 2.5 quarters of football, and they overcame that in the last 5 minutes of that game. That's clutch. That's huge.
All right, let's get one more in while we got you here, John. CJ, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I agree with what you're saying. It does feel good to have a win, but I think the fan base, man, we're seeing Bradley get out-coached, like, week after week. That's the problem. The team has the talent now to win. We've been in every game except for the New England game, really. We should have probably, but at this point, that's why everybody's so mad, because we feel like Gus Bradley's getting outcoached week after week, man.
All right, well, let me just ask you this. I'm not saying Gus Bradley's been a perfect coach. Far from it, okay? What did Rex Ryan do to outcoach Gus Bradley? What did Rex Ryan do that was so great yesterday?
Because he coached these backup third and fourth string guys burning our draft picks, man. Burning draft. He's coached those guys up to play beyond their ability.
Did he coach E.J. Manuel to throw? Did he coach E.J. Manuel to throw back-to-back interceptions and fumble the ball deep in his own territory?
Well, hold on, Mike. This is the thing. Our guys, the only reason the Jaguars have won any games, in my opinion, during the Bradley regime is because these guys got heart and these guys talent, and they're making plays on their own. They're not making plays because Bradley directed them. It's like Bradley, he's got to fall back, man, and let, maybe if he's got to let Marone do a little bit more of the coaching, man. He's just, every game,
All right. Let me stop right there, CJ. I let you have a little rope, but when you say you have to have, let the offensive line coach have a little bit more authority in how you run the team, that's ridiculous. All right, come on. Let's be real here. So you're telling me then how come when Gus's players make plays, it's all their heart? How come it's not E.J. Manuel's heart overcoming Rex Ryan's stupid play calling yesterday? I just don't get it. No credit for Gus. People, look, if you want to dig in on Gus Bradley, that's fine. I'm not saying he's been perfect. There's no question about it. But I get a sense that people, there is a segment. I'm not saying all Jaguar fans, but there's a segment of them that are mad they won that game because that goes in Gus Bradley's win column and they want him out of here. Doesn't matter. This, all these tweets and texts I'm getting about how he's going to win a few meaningless games and cost us a good draft position and keep his job. If they're meaningless, why do you care? Why do you care either way? Honestly, why are you calling the program? Why are you listening? Why do you buy tickets? Why do you show up? If they're really all that meaningless. Isn't his job to win games? And he did his job yesterday. Can you cut the guy half a break for half a minute? I guess he constantly, every victory is through dumb luck, and every loss is directly at his feet and nothing else. So the players then what? They didn't have heart when they lost to Indy and Tampa and Houston? I don't understand. Or they didn't have enough heart to overcome all his incompetence? Or is it Jason Myers just didn't have enough heart when he's trying to kick field goals? Or is it the run defense didn't have enough heart against Tampa? I mean, come on. At some point, cut the guy a freaking break, honestly. And I'm not on the payroll. And honestly, if Shad Khan wants to fire Gus after the season, I'm fine. I'm for this team winning as many games as possible for a long period of time and hopefully championships one day. And if it's Gus leading them, great. If it's not, great, as long as they get there. So, but let's be a little bit balanced in our assessment of what the heck is going on every Sunday. Honestly, is that over the top? Maybe it is. I don't know.
You are well rested. Well rested.
I am well rested.
You know what? It's good that you had that nap.
It is a good thing I have that now. But seriously, I mean, what did Rex Ryan do that was so brilliant? Oh, he coached up his guys. Well, what about Gus coaching up his? Is Allen Hurns coached up by Gus? Does Rex Ryan, is he the wide receivers coach getting Marcus Easley open on that play? Is he the one that did that? I mean, all the credit to the opposite coach, none of the credit to your own coach. I know people have made their minds up, some of them have, on Gus, and they're honestly, I do believe there's a portion of the fan base that is upset that they won yesterday because it reflects well on Gus's overall record. That's it.
There's
no
question.
It's only one game.
And
that's the part that bothers me, and that's it.
Yeah, that's going to be there. At the same time, there's 9 games left. I think there's plenty of time for that storyline to play out. And
he
it's going to have time
for that. He may go 0-9 the rest of the way. I'm not some Gus true believer that believes he should be here regardless of whatever. He's got to get results. But the result you're asking for is a W, isn't it? I mean, you know, would you feel better if they had played great and lost? Somehow, could you play great and lose? Like, I don't know. All right, we got to take a timeout. John, good to see you. Glad you're back.
Now I need a nap. Thanks a lot.
I wore you. There you go. Right. John Osier, senior
Thanks,
writer
guys.
At Jaguars.com. O Knows here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Tony, I'm taking the next few days off. Have I mentioned that to you?
Yeah.
I'm glad the bye week's here. You enjoy Jeff Loggeman tomorrow. You enjoy John Osier in with you on Wednesday.
Yeah, man.
Hopefully I have Ryan O'Halloran on Thursday, David Garrard on Friday.
O'Halloran ought to be a beam of sunshine.
He always
on
is.
On Thursday.
He always is.
You want to talk about a day that'll feel like a loss that they won? Look, there's a lot to tear apart right from that game yesterday, and we've talked about it. It's like fans aren't hearing us talk about it.
They say hear what they want to hear,
right.
Honestly.
Dwayne Grotz was awful.
You don't talk about the bad stuff, or conversely, you don't talk about the good stuff.
The move to bench House for Grotz was a terrible decision, and I thought it was a terrible decision when they made it last week, right? And
Which we
talked
said.
About that.
Yes.
I prefaced everything I said about this game today saying a good team would have shut down Buffalo when they got the 24-point lead. The Jaguars are a bad team that found a way to still win the game. I've prefaced everything I said by saying they're bad, but they found a way to win that game yesterday. Right. And
they're truly,
I'm getting this reaction.
If they don't hear exactly what aligns with their viewpoint,
how could you say they're good? I didn't. I said they were good enough to win yesterday.
They hear what they want to hear, and that's fine. You know what? So sorry the Jags lost or won yesterday. I guess to some people it was a loss because it doesn't put Gus Bradley's burner up to 550 on
sure.
the oven.
Look, I think there's things to question about Gus. There's clearly things to question. The play calling down on the goal line is terrible.
We've questioned them.
That they had to call a timeout before a quarterback sneak. They're not getting guys out on special teams. They can't get 11 guys on the field on special teams. I mean, those are all still questions that are there. And you hope that at some point they stop. So if you have questions about Gus Bradley and his long-term future in Jacksonville as the coach, that's fine. I think that they're still relevant, and they're not cured by winning that game yesterday. But they won. They won the game yesterday against Buffalo. They didn't lose a game that they had a 24-point lead. It would have been the worst by far of the Gus Bradley regime.
All right, I'm just going to read this one last text, and I shouldn't, but I will, and then we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today. I don't think it'll be bad when we ask for the team's MVP, but I already know what some of the responses
were.
There's
some sarcasm.
This one from the 904 area code. You've got to remember that 1010 has been brainwashing your listeners into thinking that Gus is no good. All we've been hearing is the record over the past few years. 5-29 over the past 3 years, or 13-72 out of the past 5 years. Primetime idiots keep bringing up what a terrible record in every segment of every show. Now you're complaining that you finally convinced those on how bad they are. First of all, I don't care what everyone else says. All I speak for is myself. I don't speak for Tony, for that matter, and we're together every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So I speak for me. Tony speaks for himself. I don't try to convince you anything. You don't have to believe anything I say. I'm going to tell you my opinion, honestly, how I see it every single time. If you don't like it, that's up to you to decide. I don't care.
Sure.
I really don't. I'm going to give you my honest opinion. If I start caring about what you think about my opinion, then I'm not going to be able to do my job effectively. So have I pointed out Gus's record? Absolutely, I pointed out, because I think it is a fair criticism, his overall record. My only point being, here we are not 24 hours removed from a rare win for your Jacksonville Jaguars, and it seems like some people are actually more upset that they won. Not everyone. This may be a small percentage, but I would hope it would be a none percentage of people that would be happy that their team lost in this circumstance. This is week 7. There's a lot of football to be played. The Colts are not 7-0. It's not like they've run away with things. They stink.
Houston stinks.
The Colts lost at home to New Orleans yesterday.
Yeah.
The Colts will keep you alive with their own ineptitude.
I said it kind of in jest yesterday, but actually it may be a reality that 6 wins is enough to win the South.
Yeah, I thought 6 was a little strong, but then
I don't know, man.
I still think 6 is probably a little strong, but
who were they beating outside of their division?
Worry about this week. They got Carolina this week.
Honestly, I think when the Jaguars play a game again, they're going to be tied in the loss column for the division.
They may be.
I think the Colts are going to lose to Carolina. Even if Houston beats Tennessee, it'll still be the same loss column.
Isn't that more fun than the alternative? Isn't that more fun than having the same record and being 4 games out already?
Yeah.
I mean, it is to me, anyway. I don't know. You can think what you like. You're going to do it anyway.
Still, half a carrot dangling out there. I'm not saying that I think they're going to win the South or that they've played well enough that you would consider them a contender for the South. It's that everyone else has been so bad that they can't knock anybody in the division out of contention in the AFC South, and the Colts remain terrible. Matt Hasselbeck has more wins this season than Andrew Luck. That's the reality in Indianapolis. They were a better offense with Matt Hasselbeck than Andrew Luck.
Quarterback controversy.
That's how bad Andrew Luck has been in the games that he's played to this point in 2015.
All right, you know what? You see what you want to see and believe what you want to believe, and I will try not to think about it for the next 48 hours, to be quite frank with you. And I'll see you on Thursday. Tony, the fan feedback spotlight today.
Yes.
Ask folks, who is the MVP, most valuable performer in yesterday's contest?
From Irish Jaguar, who was there. Telvin, dude, was all over the field making plays everywhere. From Ocho Fisho, Bortles, yeah, he almost lost it, but he did what the great ones do and won it. From Duval Doom, Telvin Smith by a mile, although some great plays from others too. From Black Dog Express, co-MVPs for Telvin, Taz, Devil Smith, and Allen, I can catch any dang thing, Hearns. From Josh, that ref that called the pass interference, thanks, bruh. #Super Bowl bound. From Stoff, Me, I was drinking with Bills fans and broke them when it came to pints versus Labatt cans and Jaeger. From Union Jack's Joe, seeing as Aaron Colvin is the official UK mascot, he has to get the nod. From Caleb, TJ Yeldon showed excellent vision and regularly makes at least one defender miss. He certainly did yesterday. From Jay, player of the game has to be Telvin Smith. The broadcasters couldn't stop his name. Hashtag beast mode. From Alvaro, Blake Bortles overcoming the interception. And from Brian Yeldon, first running back to go 100-plus versus Bills, compensated for less than Blake.
Oh, boy, I really was looking for one tweet in particular that I... Nah, I'm not even going to go there. Why waste my last 30 seconds? Son? I'm going to go a clean conscience. Now, you hush there, Tyler Devitt, all right? You can talk about it. You can call in the Fat Tony Show tomorrow night, and you guys can do anything you like. You guys can have free reign. You, the three of you with Loggeman tomorrow, they'll be outstanding. Go at it, and I will not. I'm going to take a couple days off. The bye week is here, and I am so, so glad for that. So glad. I'm glad the Jags won. I don't care about anybody else. I'm glad that they won. I'm happy that they're 2-5 as opposed to 1-6. So sue me for being a softie. Whatever. That does it for Jaguars today. Happy Monday to you from Wild West Guns and Gold. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.